This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Okay, the word is out. They're gonna talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe. Is to know from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 611. We return to the Blum Treehouse of Horror with Nocturne and Evil Eye. There we go.
I think we figured out why they led with the other two.
Yeah, yep. No kidding. Oof.
I was thinking after our conversation last week, you know, we're like, why did they start with these? These weren't even that scary. Oh, boy.
Oh, well. Yeah. Now we know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because they're going to get worse.
I think it all makes sense now.
Yes. Yeah. Like, they were smarter than we thought.
Well.
I mean, it is Blumhouse. They do know what they're doing.
Well, yeah. But it's like they knew what they were doing. We just didn't know what we were
Correct.
In for.
Correct.
They knew what they were doing, but not when it came to actually making the movies themselves.
Also yes. Correct.
Yeah. They might be spreading themselves a little too thin. Before we dig in too much, we should probably go around the virtual table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Quick shameless plugs. Don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeart, wherever you find your podcasts. You
Spreaker.
Can find Spreaker, wherever you find your podcasts.
How much did you invest in Spreaker?
Invest? When you create it, you don't have to invest.
See, this is the difference between our investing prowess. Kevin invested in Spreaker, and I bought Peloton.
Well, you look, which one have you heard of, boys?
Yes.
Also, don't forget, you can find us on the Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, and you can also become a real-life League of Show Sharer member by sharing an episode. People who were kind enough to share the show this week: Heather Sachs, Librarian Cynthia, Chris Falls, Gabriel Lugo, Travis Tewitt, Chris Williams, Tammy Sherman Powers, Ralph Tribble, Chris Sanders, Matt Neglia, Random Chatterings, Daniel and Dean from the Movie Journey podcast, Nerdrovert. Did I say that right? Nerdrovert?
I think it's Nerdavert, isn't it? Well, that's how you say it usually.
Gotcha.
Quasi-offensive.
Yeah. Nerd Adonis, Spoiler Piece Theater.
Hold on. Do we have a lawsuit on our hands there?
I know,
it's getting awfully close.
James from Geek to Me Radio, Ronnie Castle, Colby Mack, Ryan Terry, Aaron White from Feel and Film, J.D. Duran from Duran Duran. No, from Inception Film, Invasion of the Remake. So thank you very much, guys, for sharing the show. We greatly appreciate it. And also don't forget our Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month you get all sorts of bonus content and you help out, and we appreciate it.
And there's, Joe's some, got there's a, something special. Yeah, there's something special coming hopefully on the 30th. with any luck. As I see Kevin rubbing the sleep from his eyes, I'm not entirely sure that's going to happen, but that's the plan.
Did not sleep well this weekend. I'm very tired.
So, but yeah, I did a commentary track with a friend of the show, Learn from KC95 about The Crow. So that movie takes place on October 30th. So we figured now would be a good time to knock that out.
And then, in the interest of fair time, after you do one about The Crow, you can do one about Tom Servo.
Well, I would love to do one about Tom Servo.
So anyway, there's all that. Let's dig in. Which one of these movies?
I watched them in Evil Eye and then Nocturne. So
I did the opposite.
I did it the Joe way. I did Evil Eye.
Two out of three. Nah, majority rules.
Okay.
I mean, sure, finish yeah. crappily. That's fine.
I think no matter which direction we go, we're going to finish that one.
Yeah, I know.
The piles of crap are definitely lower depending on which way we go.
So Evil Eye, I think, might be a cinematic first.
What? As in?
As in, I don't know that I've ever seen a movie say this before. It said, based on an Audible original.
I heard about this. Yeah.
This might be the first movie ever based on a podcast, right?
So now Amazon is scooping into their Audible original content to make movies, whereas they used to go to comic books and books and all that. That's interesting. I can't recall. I mean, I can't say for sure that no one's ever done it, but definitely this is the first time I've ever heard Audible mentioned in that.
I think this is a burgeoning thing in podcasts, which is fiction podcasts where they actually tell a story. Other people might remember it as old-time radio.
It's like, exactly what it is.
Yeah. They love that they're like, fiction podcasts, these are amazing. And I'm like, yeah, that's not new. You know that, right?
Well, what's old is new again.
Right.
Isn't it? It's, you know,
the fact that, you know, radio eventually turned into TV and movies and all that stuff, and then podcasts definitely have killed radio, and now podcasts are like, well, let's tell stories.
Yeah, it's so it's crazy.
Like there's a Wolverine podcast. Like there's like, I think it's like a
sure.
It was
like,
pretty good,
like
wasn't
reporter.
It?
Yeah, the first season was pretty solid. Like a reporter trying to track down this urban legend of this guy. And
so like the Hulk TV show, but with Wolverine.
Kinda, yeah. Kinda. That's pretty much what it was, yeah.
I heard David Goyer is going to do a whole...
No. Oh, I mean, he is. Like, that's the... whatever, man. Yeah. That guy. You know, it's so weird. I was just watching something that talked about him before he was this version of David Goyer.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, yeah, he did write some interesting stuff.
Well, yeah.
And now he's here, and it's just like, go away. Nobody likes you. Like,
show us on the Joe doll where David Goyer touched you.
Right in my heart. Yeah. Like, he just, I mean.
You hate him so much.
Well, because he's such a hack. Like, people gush about, like, oh, he wrote The Dark Knight. And I was like, you know, Jonathan Nolan was also involved in that. So I think David Goyer was like, would show up with a new tattoo and shave his head while he's there because he's so cool. And then Jonathan Nolan would take care of the heavy lifting. Ugh, David
so
Goyer's
his,
the worst.
His job was just to show up with his new tattoo?
Yeah, yeah, and then shave his head.
Oh, yeah.
I will say that it being an Audible original, I think it really, once you know that, you can't unknow it. And because there's so little that goes on in this movie that's visually interesting, with the exception of their flashbacks to, you know, the incident, quote unquote, like so much of it is just, it really feels like they just took the script from a radio play and they put them in a room and filmed them saying it.
Yeah.
Well, to build on that, there is so little that happens.
Yeah.
And then the flashbacks, like all of these movies, with the exception of The Lie, the reveal is so obvious. What else did you think it was going to be? The mom's all cagey and scared and worried. Yeah. You flash back to India, you know, where she lives, and it's a different woman than the daughter, so she's clearly not seeing the future for the daughter because it's a different person at the same age. And it's like, yeah, she's having a traumatic like none of these reveals
right
hit you over the head where you're like, oh my god. So basically they tried to make their own Twilight Zone / Black Mirror.
That's what this is, right? Like, this is just his...
Clearly, the Welcome to the Blumhouse is their attempt to make the Twilight Zone.
That's exactly... When I got to the fourth one, when I got to Nocturne, I was like, oh, that's what he's trying to do.
They all have a twist.
Yeah. Right.
They're all not very good, and they all don't need to be hour-and-a-half movies.
I don't know. I do think the first two...
The Lie is good. That's the only one I will say.
And I think... There are parts of Nocturne when we get there that I did enjoy.
Oh, I hated Nocturne. I thought Nocturne was horrible.
Don't disagree, but I will say there were parts of it that I was like, okay, you know.
But they beat and switched everyone with the Halloween thing.
Yes.
None of these are really scary or horror.
Yeah.
None of these.
No.
They screwed people over. Welcome to the Blumhouse. Four creepy tales from Jason Blum, the master of horror.
Right? Aren't we getting four more of these?
Yeah, I think there's four more, right?
Eight, but not this month. They're coming later. But this October, you know, Welcome to the Blumhouse.
Do you think this does any damage to his name or to the name of Blumhouse?
I don't think so.
I don't think it does any damage to his name, but I think that Amazon did a huge bait and switch on people.
I don't think it damages his name only because... It's on Amazon. If this was on Netflix, I think it could do some damage, but I just don't think it's getting enough traction with regular people for it to really do long-term damage, is my guess.
That's probably true. I was just thinking, you know, you can build up enough clout with moviegoers to maybe get like three or four swings and a miss.
Yeah.
But when you put out something like this and that, you know, it's like Kevin said, it's hyped up. I think that that bad word of mouth could be more damaging than not, but you make a good point. It's on Amazon. I think the only people that are looking for this stuff are the people that are Blumhouse devotees.
Well, this is essentially a season of TV is what they did. Again, this is like they're trying to do a Twilight Zone and calling it the Welcome to the Blumhouse. But the problem is that the lie is the only one that's like really good. And that definitely isn't like that has less horror than all these other ones have in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then all these other ones, it's like they're so slow and meandering. The twists you can see from a mile away. And then none of them made me the lie aside. None of these made me feel scared, tension, horror. So I guess let's do Evil Eye first, which I thought was the better of the two. But
I agree. And here's what I will say. On a positive note.
Yeah.
I appreciate seeing an Indian horror movie.
Yeah.
You know, like...
I loved the culture stuff. Like, hats off for them.
Yes, the stuff that works. Yeah.
Yes.
And I did like the daughter. I thought the daughter was a solid actor. I thought she was fine. Everything else around her... Yeah, the mom was good. And the dad is actually the guru from Silicon Valley.
Oh, okay.
Which is very funny.
Yeah, I didn't really have a problem with the actors. It's the story. It's the fact that they dragged it into a film, and it's just like, nothing's really happening. Oh, there might be some bad stuff going on here, but let's see. Oh, is the mom going to come home? Because they're on the phone. The entire movie is the daughter talking to the mom until the last 15 minutes.
Because it's a radio play.
Yeah, right, that's what I'm saying. So it's like as a film, but you're
right. Which I gotta tell you though, like this. So the only Audible original I've listened to is "They Call Me God," which is the story of the DC sniper, which is enthralling because they talk to like everybody that was involved in that case. I could see this being pretty fun, a fun little horror Audible thing.
Sure.
Right? Like, if you're only getting the if you're not having to look at anything and you're getting the conversations from the mom and the daughter
and if it's 45 minutes long.
Correct.
Yeah.
I think I could see this working, but it just, for whatever reason, it just did not transfer. That format did not transfer to the to TV.
Because it all hinges on phone calls. It's a movie about a phone call. And several phone calls, and so it wasn't.
Wasn't it weird that we say that, but like we?
But Searching, which is a movie about a guy on the playing on the internet.
That's what I was saying. Is like we kind of praised Searching and Unfriended. Like,
yeah,
the concept is whatever, but it was a decent movie.
You're right with the right script. I mean, but to that extent, I mean, Buried, the Tom Hardy on a phone driving.
Oh, Locke. Both of those are fantastic.
Sure, there's
movies.
Phone Booth, I guess, probably is better than this. You know, I mean,
there's no bat nipples in Phone Booth. I was disappointed. It's a Joel Schumacher movie.
Okay. Rest in peace.
Yeah, right. Stand by
speak
my
ill of the. But
he made two bad Batman movies.
Yeah. So let's get into the story and what the mom and daughter are doing here.
So, like we talked about in the very
beginning,
should
we just press play on Audible? Sorry, here we go.
I know.
Press
yeah,
play.
Right,
listen
yeah.
to this and come back.
We get a little flashback of some incident, the inciting incident, and then we flash forward and we meet. Our main character, who I don't remember her name, and she is living in America. Her family is back in India. She kind of has like a typical American outlook on life. She's not really into a relationship. She doesn't want to do the arranged marriage thing. And her mother is definitely pushing for the arranged marriage. Like, I guess the idea is you have to be married by the time you're 30, and the daughter wants nothing to do with it. So the mom ends up and I don't know, maybe it's because I have no
soul.
That's probably true too, but like no like comprehension of that culture,
right? Okay.
Right, like just the whole arranged marriage thing.
Yeah, I was just sitting here thinking that like because I honestly don't know, like, is that still this big of a thing in that culture?
Right.
Because it keeps coming up a lot, and I can't figure if it comes up a lot because it's still a thing or if it's just become a lazy storytelling device.
I think it is a thing.
Yeah.
I think
but
it
even,
is.
But you think it's even for somebody, for a daughter that like lives in America?
Yeah.
I mean, I think
if your parents are in India.
If your parents are first generation, then. Mm-hmm.
I guess that's true.
You know,
that's fair.
No, I really do. And so I like the way that it spoke to the culture. And again, it's not like we're experts, but I do believe it's a thing. And I like how the characters in the film can relate over that because they're like, yeah, this is a meeting. Because I think that the pressure is on these kids that have parents that are first generation, like Tom said. Like all the culture stuff I thought was interesting. I was glad to see a movie that revolved around it, especially an American movie, but that, you know, because obviously if you get watch an Indian movie, you're going to get more of that. But it's nice that they chose one of the stories to be about Indian culture, and I found that stuff really interesting. But it's just the story and the suspense and the mystery part of it that really lacked.
Yeah.
And so
just real quick back to the arranged marriage stuff, I'm trying to remember, did they actually use the term arranged marriage?
I don't think so.
Because I'm honestly wondering if quote unquote arranged marriage is more about our bias than this movie. Because like,
oh,
because is it an arranged marriage as we think of it, right? Or is it just parents pushing the daughter to marry someone of their own culture and background?
Oh, that's interesting. I never thought of that.
Yeah, I think the latter. It's not arranged.
Because
it's...
if that's the case, like, that's not weird at all, right? I mean, like, I'm not saying that you should push for it. I'm saying that, like, that's not weird in terms of that's not a new or unusual thing.
I think even my grandmother, when she found out, she was one of her first questions when I started dating Leanne was, is she Italian?
Right. Yeah, I mean, like, it's a plot point in The Godfather. That movie's not that far removed from today. You know what I mean? And
yeah, right. Arranged marriage, I think, is when two families say you are going to get married and they have a financial benefit. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
I think we're using that as shorthand.
Yeah.
But it is in their culture, I believe, it seems more prominent that they want, you know, what their daughter or their sons, they want them to marry another Indian person that has the same culture. So yeah,
sure,
I think
maybe we're
using the word wrong, and I'm glad you point that out. But it's not like arranged, but it's like, oh, you meet this boy because he's a nice Indian boy.
But the parents are, the family are a little bit more hands-on and like,
yes,
here's someone to meet.
To the point where the mom is setting up.
Right.
Like, she's like, I have a date for you.
Yeah.
And of course the daughter's like, no, like, and finally like the mom kind of pleads to her softer side. She's like, can you just do, like, I'll do this one more time and then I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. So she goes, and of course I gotta tell you, when she walked up in that dress, I was like, good Lord.
They're, like, both the leads of this movie are gorgeous. I mean, there's no doubt.
Goodness.
I mean, yeah, she's stunning. You know, the dude that she meets is really handsome. Like I said, both the leads look like they came out of a Maxim magazine. Like they're like models, you know, for sure. They have very like stunning features.
Yes, right. So she sees this guy and she kind of bails. She doesn't go in right away. And then I think, does she go back in, but it's not the guy?
So she's meeting the blind date, and the blind date is late, but she sees another Indian man in there and, is, yes. and begins thinking that, oh, he must be the date. And then she figures out that he's not, but she likes him better. And
yes.
So she kind of plays hard to get over.
I do like where, like, she tells her mom that she bailed on the date, and she was like, he was late. What did you want me to do?
Totally.
Like, this is, you know, yeah. of course. So our two main characters start this relationship, and everything's going pretty smoothly for the most part. He's pretty good with kids and, like, the, you know, all of, but the,
he's got money.
He comes from
he's
money.
He's got a lot of money.
He's good looking. Like, I mean, like, everything seems perfect, but the
isn't that the way it always works?
Well, especially in these horror movies, when
right.
it's too good to
yeah.
be true, you know something's up.
They're good. If it's too good to be true, they will stab you in the face.
Correct. Or boil a bunny. I don't know. Yeah. So he gives her a gift, and it's these, like, heart-shaped sapphire
box?
Earrings.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. No, I, yes, all day with that song. and she isn't, like, what I pick up on is she's not that kind of girl, right? Like, she doesn't need material things. That's not kind of her
style.
I think
it's because in their culture, when you give jewelry, it means that things are serious, and she's not she's dating the dude, but she's not ready to
it was
to
just
go
too
to the
big
next
of
level
a gift
yet.
He was
yeah.
coming
okay.
on a little
okay.
he was bringing the heat, and she's like
he brought the heat.
Settle down,
she's
there,
like
cowboy.
I like you, we're have this is good, you know, no problems, but I can't accept that would be like too fast into the next step,
right? I did not think that, but that's a good call.
Because she's to the mom, she's like, he gave me jewelry. They made
it was too much too soon. It's the gift-giving equivalent of anal, right? It's just, she's just not ready for that yet. You gotta get built up.
She's
to
like,
that.
whoa, big boy.
Yeah.
Like, let's pump the brakes.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, we should mention this whole thing with Evil Eye, which I don't even understand.
I wasn't even going to bring it up because
that,
it was pointless.
But the movie's called Evil Eye.
Right.
We have
I
to talk
agree,
about this.
But they drop it real quick.
But I'm glad to know that three of us watch this movie. Three of us have no idea how the Evil Eye works, what it is, how it functions. It's like the whole beginning of the movie is like something protector from the Evil Eye. Evil Eye. She has a necklace of an eye. All this, but what is the Evil Eye?
So I guess
the dude,
I thought
a spirit. I don't know.
Well, that's what I thought. Right? Like, is she when she wears the necklace or the bracelet? Like, it's almost like the cloak of invisibility, where evil doesn't pick up on her, but as soon as she takes it off, evil finds her.
He met her before the eye was off, right?
No, she took the eye off like on oh wait
she was on the computer.
Maybe you're
at one
right
point. I thought that she took it off. No, wasn't the mom like badgering her about the relationship and then she took it off? I thought it was after
yes.
she met the guy.
It is. They're at the office and they're like, we moved in together.
See?
Like, so he offered to, yeah.
the chain and breaks or something, right? It was like
no she
it,
took it off. She was
she
like
just,
oh,
yeah,
I'm
she
done and
off.
She ripped it off or whatever. She broke it. She did it. It didn't break
but
on
you're right.
accident.
Like,
she was like pulling at it, and she's like,
"I feel
I'm
like
done.
There's." I know the scene you're talking about. I feel like there was another scene like where it broke, and then she put it back on later.
The mom did make a comment about her like not wearing it. She's like, "Oh, she just doesn't wear it sometimes." Hmm. So it's like, but then the mom also mentions a curse like from the beginning of the movie that never comes back up. And then there's the weird fart noise that happens
yeah.
while they're laying in bed together.
I totally missed like, that.
I only found it because Kevin pointed it out.
Yes.
So there's a scene.
Thank
where
you for not
leads,
backing me up and replying to my tweet, but creeping on my tweet and agreeing.
I mean,
with
you trust me. As much as we interact, it just pops up randomly. Like Kevin Brackett just tweeted.
There's this noise that plays, and he's like, I'll never lie to you. And then he keeps going, and I'm like, why did they leave that? There's two things. He either hit his head on a boom mic, the boom mic guy hit the wall, or he ripped one in the middle of their conversation. Why
like,
is it in the movie?
Time to go
yeah,
back.
Why did
we're
they not mute it out?
It.
I don't understand.
Well,
it literally,
I mean, Indian food will do that to you. So
that's true. It's wonderful food, but woo.
Like, I don't think we can make that joke. I don't know. That seems offensive.
Well, that's what food does. That's
it's
how
great
food works.
It's fantastic.
Mexican food will do
cuisine.
It to you too. Like that's there's yeah. certain foods that'll do that to you.
But
like, I don't think that's
it's the hotness.
Okay, so this movie revolves around this thing, Evil Eye, that we have no idea how
it
functions.
Does
it? They never explain it, but it's a thing. So take that for what it's worth.
Yeah. So the boyfriend starts to come on pretty strong.
Maybe somebody misheard and it was supposed to be Evil Guy.
It's just called Evil Guy.
It was Evil Guy.
Got it wrong the whole time.
Yeah. See, that makes more sense. It's about Evil Guy.
Color me red. I am so embarrassed.
So they move on. They move in.
They move forward.
He gives her money to quit her job. I know.
Yeah,
but,
like
yeah.
It becomes a controlling relationship under the guise of helping, right? Ends up quitting her job and moving in with him, and she has all the amenities that comes from his wealth, but now she's entirely dependent upon it.
Yeah, if she couldn't leave him if she wanted, she'd have no money, no place. So, yeah, he's got her, but she doesn't realize that. That doesn't come up, but we see as an audience that it's obviously unhealthy, especially early on in this relationship, because, yeah, she's got no other choice now as to what she can do. But so the parents start getting wind of this, and the dad is more like, you know...
I love the dad who's like, yeah, man, she's fine.
More of the American mindset. He's not so ingrained in that to where she has to meet the perfect guy that they match or whatever. He's like, yeah, he seems like a good guy. He comes from money. They like each other. Like, let it go. And the mom's just like, something to do with the evil eye or whatever. But she keeps seeing flashes of her past that we find out is her. And she's just having a bad feeling about this dude. I think she says, Evil Guy. There's something about Evil Guy, she keeps saying. And you just keep flashing back to where you're like, okay, get to it. They show that flashback so many times.
Yeah.
Right.
So many times.
So basically what happens is the mom has this previous relationship that it was a not good, it was very abusive. With an evil guy.
Yeah.
She leaves this guy for our main character's dad, but the evil guy keeps showing back up. And finally there's a confrontation on this bridge. And he goes over the bridge, and this guy dies.
That scene where he goes over the bridge is so bad.
It's like, so bad.
It's like she's supposed to be pushing him off the bridge, and then when they cut to him falling, you see him literally standing on the other side of the bridge wall and then falling off.
Now I go? Okay.
Yeah. The culture stuff's interesting and well done, but other than that, the writing and the shots and like some of those things are so not good and cheesy and
agreed.
It's bad. But she finds, supposedly, other than what we see and how ridiculous that is, she finds the strength to fight him off because he is physically abusive. And
she's like 9 months pregnant.
Yeah, 8 months or something with the daughter at this point.
Right.
And so she finds the strength to fight him off. And, of course, he couldn't swim. So when she threw him over the bridge, he drowns.
He drowns.
But now he's haunting from beyond the grave. And so the idea.
So the boyfriend says something,
all haunting is from beyond the grave, right?
That depends.
I mean, otherwise it's just
If it's that Indian food, it's coming back to haunt you no matter what.
There's something about romanticizing your words. It doesn't have to be so literal.
I think the boyfriend is like talking to her. Finally, he talks to her on the phone, and
he calls the dad to get permission.
Yes, correct.
And he says, he wants the mom and him to talk. Like, let's get on board here. He's a nice kid.
But doesn't he say, he says something to the mom that is a trigger?
Yes, it's the same way the other guy used to talk.
Yeah, right. It was the thing about, like, I'm only doing this for her own good or something
right,
like that.
That's right. And the mom hangs up real quick. So does she decide to fly to the States?
Well, eventually, not quite yet, but she starts flipping out. And so because of the traumatic experience, everyone knows, she doesn't leave her house. The dad knows she's got these issues. Her friends know and everything. And so when she talks to him, it starts really triggering back this PTSD she has, and she's like, only he would say that. It has to be him reincarnated. And so I like that with the culture, and because they do believe in reincarnation, like the concept is good, and the audible story may be very good, because this is really interesting. The killer has been reincarnated, and that's a part of that culture. Cool, I'm on board. Great idea. It's just bad execution here.
It's really bad.
But so when he died on that bridge, he was reincarnated, and because she like matches up the ages of the guy, and he would have been born right after that guy died.
She hires a private investigator for a lot of money. And like that's what I appreciate in that aspect is like they're looking at their like astrological signs and how everything lines up. And the guy's like, no, they line up perfectly.
That
like,
was great. That was a very funny moment to where
I enjoyed that.
That was, yeah, before
like,
she
I
was
can't
freaking
believe
out.
It. And he's like, she's like, I knew it. And he's like, no, they're perfect.
Yeah.
For each
10
other.
Out of
she's
10
like,
match.
What?
Yeah. And so that stuff was really interesting. But when she starts freaking out, the dad is like, you've got to calm down. Like, I'm here for you. And everyone just thinks that what she's saying, because it would sound crazy if you weren't in this movie.
Right.
And so she says that because of the guy's age and how he was born right after that guy died, his spirit was reincarnated after he died into this guy. Now, at this point in the movie, we don't know if that's true or false, but it's matching up, but everyone just thinks she's crazy. And so...
Well, that's what the dad even says. He's like, he calls his daughter and says, look, if you get a call from your mom, like... She's off her meds. She's off her rocker. Just disregard whatever she's saying. And, you know, the daughter's like, okay.
And I feel like we know it's true because the movie's not called Unusual Coincidence.
Yes. Oh, true.
It's called Evil. It's called Evil
Guy. Well, that's, well, right. And that's why I'm saying the reveal is so lazy in this one and the others because you know it and they keep
flashing.
There
was never any tension. It's just just literally part of the narrative structure.
Yeah, just show me when this guy's...
I feel like what they were trying to do is the bomb under the table thing, right? Like... The audience knows that he's the bad guy.
Right.
And we're just waiting for that to detonate, but it just never does.
It's just
I mean, it does sort of, but
it's
like
lackluster.
It's like instead of it being a bomb, it's one of those little like poppers.
Yeah.
Boop.
The snap pops that you throw.
The snap.
Like,
exactly.
Because you never really, until the very end, you never really see any flashes of his evil guyness.
No.
Right?
Like, sure. No, I agree.
He does things that are controlling, but they are explainable and can seem like romantic or helpful gestures. And you never get that moment, you know, that for lack of a, you know, I wouldn't want literally like this, but you never get that mustache twirling moment where when she turns away and he's like, ha ha ha, or, you know, a flash of anger that she just happens to miss. Like he really is on his best behavior, not just for her, but for the viewer. So like, you know, it's coming, but you don't get it never really ramps up the tension. It's just this thing of like, oh, but later he's going to be a.
Then the reveal is on a phone call, which seems so lackluster in a film, right?
Yeah.
Because it's different if you're in an audio thing. That's all you can really do other than face-to-face conversation. So he calls the mom, and after, like, basically people think she's crazy, and then, you know, he's acting all nice and normal, but then they talk on the phone, and he's like, hey, you know, you're just like whatever. And he starts talking about their past memories. And so she knows that he's confirming he's the guy.
Correct.
And he's like, I told you, I want to see you in person, blah, blah, blah. So that triggers her to go to America. She leaves. She leaves a note for the husband, you know, and he's, of course, freaking out and worried about her. But she comes to America and meets up with the dude. And it's just like, it's so lackluster.
How do they meet up? Because she's coming there to protect her daughter. And then all of a sudden, she goes to the apartment
that I thought he says, like, I've got a place. You can come stay with me. And I thought she showed up there.
I don't remember. See,
maybe
the
it's their new
I don't
apartment.
Remember.
Either way, she shows up and he's there. And then it's just like, yeah, I'm the guy. And all I've ever wanted is you. And, you know, it's just like this creepy.
He's like, if you tell her, I'm going to kill all of you.
Yeah.
So they have this awkward dinner. And finally, what I think is actually a pretty good reveal is... the mom is wearing the exact same
earrings,
sapphire earrings. And I thought that was a, like,
I like that part.
I know we're going to dog on this movie, but that, I thought that was a fun little reveal where she kind of like pulls her hair back and she's wearing the same earrings.
I don't know. I think it'd be better if somehow he had given the same earrings, but it's like, okay, he bought another pair of, this guy only gives the one exact style of earrings. Like, I don't know.
I took it as like, that's his move.
That's
you know,
what I. That's,
you know what
that's
mean? Like
I
that.
It.
That's his go-to move, and that it worked before, and so he's going to do it again. Like
it's
that's
20
right.
years later. Where did he get the exact same style and design of
earrings? If it works, it works.
Yeah,
you stick with what you know.
I know. I just think that's a little. I get that if it's his move, but it's like. If there was some way the film would have explained, oh, these come from that one really rare mountain that you can only get these earrings, and they somehow explained why he has multiple of the same or that it was special that he has the same. But
what was that movie we saw with Chloe Grace Moretz, where the gal just Kick-ass. Like would leave.
Hit Girl.
It was that bad horror movie where the gal would like
Grace?
Leave purses. Is that what it was?
Isn't it called Grace?
Oh yeah,
Greta.
Greta. Where the guy's just got like
purses,
a whole drawer, full of these earrings, and that's just like that's what he uses. But yeah, so
but also, I mean, if this guy comes from enough money, like he could just have a maid too. Like that's you know.
Sure. I just.
I mean, because they established that the guy's got FU money.
Yeah, for
right?
sure.
So yeah.
I didn't care for the reveal. I thought it was dumb.
I thought the last 10 minutes were fine, like with the knockdown dragout in the kitchen. And we're like, oh, sure. There's something's going to occur.
Right. I mean, yeah. Okay. I think by the time you get to the end, though, and again,
I
watched
this
fourth.
Oh my god, this ending was. So like, I liked the fight. I liked the reveal. Boyfriend ends up getting killed in the process. Mom gets stabbed.
He's about to drown the daughter in the sink. And then what does the mom do to kill him? Hits him with a pot or something?
Hits him with a pot a lot.
And he starts bleeding out or whatever.
Yeah. And either way, he dies.
And they go to the
hospital.
You go to the hospital.
Yeah.
Because that's the very last thing before the credits. You can't get there yet. That's the whole revelation at the end. No.
The last thing is a baby.
Yeah, because the guy dies and he's reincarnated as the baby.
Right. So I'm saying I thought he died in the house.
No, he dies in the hospital. That's what the flatline is. And then you see a baby that he was reincarnated
as. With you.
See, that's what I mean. So he's in the hospital down the hall or whatever. So the daughter and mom are there. And then there's an Indian doctor. And you can tell the mom's thinking like, oh, well, there's
also,
a nice.
But like, of course, the doctor that walks in is a brilliantly handsome Indian man.
Yeah.
So, of course, you know, they do the whole thing again. And yeah, but the last shot of the movie is this tiny little baby waking up.
Yeah, you hear a flat line.
Oh, so we're going to start over with the daughter's kids? Like, that's.
I know.
Next...
That's where I was like, so, like, oh boy, when he's going to. I just picture her at 80 and he's like, and this 25-year-old guy being like, no, I still love you.
It's Jaws 4 all over again.
Yeah. So I mean,
what would be
the end game of this plot? You know,
like, well, he can only do it like one more time max, and then it's just
maybe. Right, yeah, right,
I guess
right.
He can go for the daughter because he still seemed to like her. Maybe that's
he could go for the daughter's kids. But I mean, at this point, she's 30.
But if he likes the daughter, he already had her. Like, why did he then do the? You know what I mean? Like, what's the point of the reincarnation? Like,
it was all to get back at the mom. But you're right. At some point, I don't know what his end game is. It's all it's to show is that evil lives.
Hold on, I'm gonna look this up on Audible right now and see how long it is.
Yeah,
hats off for the culture. I mean, the actors were good, like for what they were doing. Like, they weren't the problem, but I don't think it translates. Like we said, the suspense wasn't there, and there's. By the time you get to the end, sure, something happens, but it's like, I don't know. This is the fourth movie I watched of these, and I'm just like.
This thing was a snooze.
Yeah.
It was definitely a snooze.
Well, talk about snooze. Wait till we get into the next one.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And although I got to say, I actually liked the next one better, but
I did like the next one better.
But I get that it's a very frustrating movie. This movie, so Nocturne is not, it's not near as smart or clever as it thinks it is.
Yo, God.
At all. It's so dumb.
Yeah. and I think I enjoyed it as it was unfolding more than once it was over when I'm just like, this is all we're doing? Like, I thought we were.
Nothing happens toward the end. There's like one half scary thing, like scary in quotes, and one actual scary thing, like when you see a dead person. The whole movie is nothing but a girl playing piano until the end.
So I think that they've got something.
Yeah, it's called. Right? And what they've got is called Black Swan.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's exactly
right.
This
is Black Swan almost beat for beat.
Except for the dancing and everything is so much more enthralling than a cut to a hand double playing piano.
Right. Yeah.
For the entire movie. The entire movie is cut to her face, cut to someone else playing piano, cut to her face, cut to something. Yeah. I mean, you never see a full body shot. Clearly, she doesn't play piano. If she does, they did her a disservice because you never see her doing it. The entire movie, it's just two sisters One, it seems to have all the luck. One of them played piano when she was a kid and got scared and really never played again. And then she finds a dead girl's journal that has some creepy drawings in it, and she starts getting possessed by that spirit or whatever. And
so here's the thing about a horror movie is,
well, I don't think she's possessed so much is I mean I took it as she's having a psychotic break. You know, she's not mentally well.
Oh, I think
the journal definitely, that's why the first girl killed herself. The journal and the pictures and stuff and the words definitely have some kind of an effect over them.
But here's the problem with that is when it comes to like a possession movie, the movie will give you some sort of reason or explanation as to how they became possessed, right? Like, yeah. In The Exorcist, we know what happened to Reagan. Like, and so in this one, it's just like, well, how the hell did this thing?
They never show you the backstory of the journal. They don't tell you.
They never show you the backstory.
They don't
show
you who the demon is
or that other gal. Like, I think that opening scene is good. Like, I always appreciate a cold open. So like her playing the piano and then jumping off, and you're like, what the hell? Violin. Sorry.
Yeah.
What the hell are we getting into?
Sure.
And then we never get anything else like that.
Until the end, you get something just like that, which, I mean, it lines up with them having the same fate, but all the in-between is so terribly boring. Again, it's like there's two sisters, and then the good sister, the one that is really good at piano and seems to always... Oh, V,
you know who that is. You know who that is, right?
No.
It's Bethany from Jumanji.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah, I did.
Yeah, yeah. And she was good. That's the other thing is, like, we've seen that actress before and we've liked that actress. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, oh, man, this is terrible.
Okay.
This is awful.
Gotcha. So V is the star piano player, and she seems to always be getting ahead. And she gets into Juilliard to play piano, and the other sister hasn't even gotten accepted to a school. And her parents are trying to tell her, like, hey, it's okay. You know, you don't need to go do all that, blah, blah, blah.
I like the aspect of, like, it's not that the other sister isn't talented. She just isn't quite as talented.
I agree.
Right? And she's not confident.
Yeah,
she lost her confidence because of that second grade whatever when she froze.
They're both at this extremely competitive art school, and the sister gets accepted into Juilliard, and the other sister, Juliet, I think her name is, doesn't get into Juilliard. But it's also, we come to find out, the absolutely only school she applied to, which is like ridiculous.
What are you doing?
She didn't cast a wide net.
Right.
So here's the thing about a horror / possession movie, I guess, is you need to have somebody that you're rooting for, right? Like, we talk about that all the time with Stephen King books, right? Like, they flesh out those characters, you're rooting for those characters, and then the bad things start happening to those characters.
Right.
I don't like anybody in this movie.
Because this main character is a jackass.
All of them are.
All they had to do was make her likable. And not all, but it would have really helped if you cared about Juliet, whatever.
Yeah.
I think where this movie should have gone, what would have been an interesting take, and is if you would have went through the first half or two-thirds of this movie sympathizing with Juliet, the protagonist, only to find out that we've been seeing things from her point of view, and if you rethink it all, like,
she's awful.
You realize she's awful, and it's the talented sister who seems to have everything is actually the sympathetic one, and we've just been sympathizing with the wrong person. Like, I think that would have been a nice head fake, but it kind of does that. But not really, because the other sister is still kind of...
Just as bad.
Not just as bad, but kind of douchey. And so it's, and then it wants to play this game between, like, what's real and what's in her, what's a part of her madness or possession.
Psychosis or whatever.
Yeah, but it's like, it never really answers its own questions in that regard.
This is almost like Christine, right? Like, the character in Christine is, like, the nerdy guy, and then... he gets a hold of this car, and the car gets a hold of him. So it's kind of the same premise as Christine as well. But again, with Christine, a Stephen King novel, you care about that guy.
Right.
So when he starts to turn,
I don't remember the movie so much, but I remember the book. Like, it's a tragic downfall because, like,
yeah,
you start off liking this guy. It's an interesting journey that you go on in the book because you start off liking the dude, and then at some point it switches. I mean, it's kind of like Breaking Bad in that regard, and then by the end you're just like, F this guy.
Yeah, they flip it, right? Yeah. Like, he's the nerd, and he's got, like, the jerk best friend, and then by the end of the movie it's flipped.
Right.
Where you're caring about the best friend instead of the jerk. And this is kind of in the same... They try to do that.
They just expedite her being a jerk too quick.
They
do. As soon as she gets any talent, she starts acting like a total ass. And so...
Yeah, she's got, like, this, I would say, like, crippled, drunken piano teacher who has her best interest at heart, but she decides to go against what he says and plays this different selection that, like, that's the main part,
but,
right? Like,
you know,
soon
I don't
as
know
she
that
decides,
this, I don't know that this teacher does. This teacher's kind of a
God.
Like, I mean, he's basically like, you know, you're an also-ran and you need to make your peace with that. Like, he's not really helping her.
Yeah, maybe.
And he's not encouraging her to be better. He's, like, encouraging her to be complacent.
Yeah, he's basically like, this is as good as you're ever going to get. Yeah. Enjoy it.
Just call it a day.
Where when you have a kid who, I mean, she does have talent. Like, you can't, you know what I mean? And she does, you know, she's performing at an incredibly high level. So she's surrounded by people who are also performing at an incredibly high level. But when you have somebody with that kind of talent who's, from what I can, my take from the movie is she's willing to work twice as hard as any of those people are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's part of why she's so frustrated with her sister, because she feels like her sister has more raw talent but spends less time nurturing it. And she's like, this is BS. And so, you know, a teacher should foster that, especially at a school that clearly is super expensive.
Yeah,
right?
No kidding.
Like,
and
you're,
I will say, her
a lot
parents
of money for this MF-er to nurture your kid. Like, she's not
instead you're like, no, you'll be all right.
Yeah, she's not just going to PS 119. Like, this is a, like, super expensive private art school, and this guy's like, yeah, you know, maybe you'll teach some kids piano. Anyway, have a good day. And
well, the parents are douchebags. So
yes.
when you see
that
how these kids
was that
turn
Julie
out,
Benz?
I don't know. It was
as the mom.
She is a douche, whoever she was. Like, the way she talked at dinner, like, they're both super rich and they're in Europe, so they just leave their kids to do all this stuff while they're gone. So they're gone the whole middle of the movie. And then they come back and they're just so out of touch and, like, just snobby rich people. But so the premise, so it all starts up when Juliet is feeling all down and everything. The girl from the beginning who plays violin, she kills herself, and so they need someone else to do, like,
there's like a big, like, end of year performance type thing, and there's one key slot that gets all the attention, and it apparently has launched many people's careers, and this girl had that slot until she killed herself, and so now they're re-auditioning for that performance.
Right. And of course, who gets the slot but V, the sister that gets everything. And so Juliet's very jealous of that because of all the reasons we stated. And so she finds in, like, I think the back of the mailbox of the girl that killed herself.
Well, she's getting her mail, and then they're cleaning out this girl's mailbox, and the notebook falls out.
Yeah.
And she's like, hey, 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 this is yours. And then, of course, she starts reading the notebook, and the longer she has the notebook in her possession, the more what we assume is either her psychosis or the possession takes hold.
So and the book, the way, just to spoil it, what she at first thinks it's like maybe telling her future, but what it really is, it's like the sequence of events that whoever possesses this notebook and reads it, it's like stage 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And so it's like, this is going to happen, this is going to happen, and ultimately you're going to kill yourself. And so
there are scenes, I'm just thinking of, like, as we progress through, like, the sequence of events, and it's like, this girl's very busty, and there are there's probably at least 3 minutes of her just running around in, like, a crop top t-shirt, and I'm like, I don't think this isn't a thing anymore. Like, this isn't a Friday the 13th movie where you can get away with this. And it took me out even further, where it's like, you're just there's a whole scene where it looks like she's running on a treadmill with, like, a weird light behind her. and it's just her, like, they're moving. She's not moving. They're moving things around her. And it's like, what are we doing? What are we trying to do in this movie other than
turn Joe on, apparently?
It didn't. Like, that's the thing. It's like,
I do not recall any of these.
I don't either. What I do remember is, as the movie progresses, she dresses more provocatively. Like, as she
confidence
gets more confidence, she also starts to dress sexier.
Yes.
Anyway, so they're auditioning for this new role. We find out that V has this really acclaimed teacher. He's like, if you or go to this school, you want to have this guy as your teacher. We eventually find out
she got the good teacher.
Yeah, we eventually find out he got second place this huge competition, which is still second place, but like that's a huge honor. And he conducted this thing, and you know, he was this virtuoso in his own right, but he's teaching, so clearly things didn't go according to plan. But that's who V has, and she nails the audition and ends up getting this role. And you know, Juliet's jealous because of all this. And well,
also, don't forget, Juliet auditions for that slot by playing the exact same piece of music that her sister is playing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely like a shot across the bow, and everybody's kind of like, "What are you doing?"
Yeah, and then I mean, she's late to the audition, and the sister wakes her up, and of course, you know, not of course, but like the Juliet has had her period, so like there's blood all over the place. So like, and V is like trying to get her, gets her up, like she gets her to the audition. So it's not like she's being a jerk. She's like, come on, we got to go. And then
it's because V isn't really a bad person.
She's not. Right. She's trying to make it out. She has some bad character flaws, but and, I mean,
and that's why I thought it would be a nice kind of switch if like after kind of thinking, like seeing things through one angle and thinking she's bad, realizing that like, oh, she wasn't doing bad things, but the sister was perceiving it that way. And you know, like that would have been, I think, a nice, you know, twist is too strong of a word, but approach. But
at the end of the day, the only thing she does bad is to get back at her sister when she feels the sister has wronged her, which I think is just like typical teenager stuff.
Petty teenage
stuff. It's not her sister being like, I'm the best and the prettiest and the best piano player and you're a failure. She doesn't say anything remotely mean until the end when the sister has stolen her boyfriend, stolen her music, busted her arm, caused her to break her arm so she can't play piano. V only does these mean things to get back at her sister, who, that's what I mean, Juliet is the jerk.
And the things that that V says, like, they're mean, but they're also not untrue.
They are true. Like, you shouldn't say those things, especially before a big recital. But after all V has gone through, you can see how a sister who's had everything taken from her would say these things.
Right.
In a matter of, like, 2 days.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not like this has happened over a month or in 48 hours, the sister who, I mean, basically had everything, loses her boyfriend, loses probably a scholarship.
Loses her teacher.
Loses her teacher and loses her ability to play in this big recital.
It loses her. So I think we're forgetting something. She doesn't lose her ability to play in this big recital. She loses her ability to play. Like,
that's true.
Her arm gets broken because of motion, things that were set in motion by Juliet. So now it's like she might not ever play piano at this level again.
Her Juilliard scholarship thing may not even happen. I mean, because if she can't play, that's what she's there to do. It's a performing arts school. You have to do your thing there.
Right.
So the teacher, the good teacher, quote unquote, the expert teacher, is a total creeper.
I think his name was.
He's a total creeper, and you know that the whole movie. So, you know, they keep setting up. You're like, what is this guy going to do? We eventually find out that V was sleeping with him.
Right.
Which is like, oh, that's not good.
I mean, bad move.
Because at first you're like, well, maybe he's just like a really hard teacher, but he's good. And then they reveal that.
Oh, he was a hard teacher.
Oh, he's a hard teacher. All right.
Yeah, that's.
Zing.
We've established that.
But you question, is Juliet just being a jerk? And, you know, he's a tough teacher, but he really does have these kids' best interests. And then you're like, no. He's a creeper. He's sleeping with a student.
Yeah.
She tries to come on to the teacher they start interacting.
Well, I don't even think that's like so.
Well, she says it.
This part was handled oddly to me.
It was
because
that's where I'm at.
Because like they paint this guy as a guy who's banging students, and then when she comes on to him, he's like,
he pushes her away.
He's like just appalled at the concept, but clearly he is sleeping with the other one. So like I'm just like, what? I
don't know what he was questioning there. Maybe it was weird because he was sleeping with the sister, so he's like, this is too weird. You know,
it
like,
doesn't seem like a path he'd go down, but like it seemed like that would be a selling point. But
it was weird.
It
was
because it would be a selling point. Is that what you said
for him? Yeah.
Oh, sure.
For the creeper guy.
Creeper.
Yeah. But because I think again a better angle. Like I feel like they're close to having a good movie here.
I agree.
And it's like to me a better angle is not have the supernatural aspect at all. Right. And
take that out of it. Or don't take it out of it.
I'm not even entirely convinced there is a supernatural element to this movie, but
I think that's testament to how bad the movie is. Because yeah. I think clearly there is one, and you didn't even agree with that.
Yeah, because
so
I mean, I think it's more about her psychosis, and like I think a better movie is he was sleeping with the violin girl, you know, and who doesn't like a movie with sex and violence? But
come on.
Like he's sleeping with the violin girl and it drives her insane and she kills herself. Yeah. And then he just rolls into the next one. Like
so the teacher's the one that's setting up the
one that's caught. And then he just finally gets kind of a batch of kids that like have other issues and that pushes them even to further ends than just.
Or even you tell a story where you show what could be supernatural stuff,
right?
And then there's a 5 minute montage at the end where you're like, oh no, none of that was real. Like it was just
it was always her psychosis. Like because that's
always in
because
her head.
So much of the supernatural stuff that we see is from her mindset, and they say that she's on these strong psychotropic drugs.
She's popping pills constantly,
right?
We should mention.
And so like. That's why I'm like I'm not convinced that there is a supernatural element to this film. I mean I think that it's a fair interpretation. I'm just saying I think there's also an interpretation of the movie where there was nothing supernatural going on, and this girl was having a psychotic break and toggling back and forth between reality and her own hallucinations. And
I think in a better movie that definitely
called Black Swan.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's Black Swan. Like that's
exactly Black Swan.
I mean, Black Swan is, I mean, you know, if you'll recall for people who haven't seen it, like it's set against the super competitive art backdrop of, you know, New York ballet, and this girl who is not mentally well balanced is striving to be this great ballerina, but instead she's just a really good ballerina, right? There's always someone, this other person who's a little bit better than her. And then, and then she ends up, she goes to a party and she takes drugs, and then she has this sexual escapade that has these major ramifications, and you're never really entirely sure what's real or what's in her head. And then she gives the performance of her lifetime, and right? Mm-hmm. So
it's the exact same.
I mean, like it's the same. It's,
movie. You know what Black Swan doesn't have?
What's that?
Baby eating.
Touche.
Well, yes. That's true.
There's no baby eating in Black Swan. Or rock monsters for that matter. those are some old timey references
The sister, to your point, I mean, Julia does have these anxiety issues, but I think that all spawns from that second grade performance where she lost her ability to perform, and so now she's so anxious and she's always popping pills and she's like passing out in the middle of playing. She's so worked up and the pills are taking their effect and all this stuff. But so when she eventually gets to the performance, like after she has sex with the sister's boyfriend and does all this crazy stuff, she does land this part and she gets to the performance. And she has this.
So the sister comes in. V comes in and lays into her, tears her a new one.
Yeah, right before.
And then she goes out there and she's about to play, and she freaks out. Like, and she jumps down and she sits and like away from the whatever. And then she goes. She sees this light, which has been a thing, I guess. Throughout
when the sister broke
movie.
Her arm, they were in this woods at this party,
right?
And then she sees this
bright light.
And while she's seeing the bright light, the sister goes a little too far, and she ends up falling off a drop, and that's how she breaks her arm. So it's not like the sister hit her arm or anything. But she didn't say like, "Hey, slow down." But then when the boyfriend comes to look for her, she calls out to him and says, "Hey, there's a ledge. Stop! You're going too far." And that creates the tension between the two.
I will say. when V falls off of the cliff, Jules' head is down. Like she was staring at this bright yellow light, and V runs past her while she's staring into this.
That's
light.
Why I said we know that.
Right.
We know that.
But oh, I see what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying.
She
was staring at the bright light when the sister fell off.
Yes.
But that creates the contention because then the boyfriend walks over and she's like, "Hey, there's a cliff." And
the sister's like,
"Why didn't you call out to me?" That's the. Then now the sister is mad at her, even though we know she's being possessed or seeing visions or whatever.
Correct.
But
okay.
So this is the part, the very end when she's about to play, where it separates into two things and the psychosis, whatever's going on in her head. So we see her get onto the stage and everyone's clapping and everything. And she sits at the piano and she just walks away. She gets too freaked out.
Freaks
she can't
out.
Play, walks away. Cries, does all this stuff, and then does she go up to the
roof?
So
what happens, she goes
point,
up to the roof, or, and okay. then there's a she's looking into the bright light, and she comes to, and she's like
at
finishing
the piano.
She's finishing the piano. Mm. Everybody's freaking out, and you know, they're standing ovation, and even
the sister
V is smiling. Mm. And I was like, oh, all right, well, that's okay. So she's completely possessed at this point,
and the principal or whatever comes over, gives her flowers, and she's like, they love you. You're a star. And she's like,
right.
I am a star. But
and
then we flash forward and she actually did step off the roof to kill herself. So that
and
was all.
I thought the way her face was, right? Like her face is kind of mangled and blood everywhere. And I think just like the smile that she gives at the end, I was like,
yeah,
that's creepy. Like that's
yeah,
a creepy
the Pennywise
paint. Kinda. Yeah.
yeah she's yeah. upside down. She had fallen down on a statue that was on the ground, you know, when she stepped off the roof, and there's a upside down like red paint like Pennywise the new one has Bill Skarsgård on his face.
not Skarsgård, Skarsgård.
But then what are they trying to say here? There's a bunch of kids walking right past it. There's no way. Are they trying to say, oh, people are so consumed with technology in themselves,
or I
they
think
don't,
that like
what are they saying here?
They think that it's art.
Yeah, that's
but
what
they,
I'm like.
But
what
the statue's been there for the whole movie, so like,
yeah.
it's not like.
No, they're putting the statue up. They're putting the statue. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, the statue is being built in like the beginning of the movie, and I was like, well, that's all right. That,
but
they tried to be clever, but
a dead girl, I like
leaking blood.
I think they're trying to say a commentary on kids and phones and whatever, but.
I couldn't tell if it was that or because the kids were ignoring it, like the students walking around campus were just blasé as they were walking by the statue with a rotting carcass on it, that
yeah.
that they were still trying to leave in your head like, ooh, which ending is real? We don't know.
See, that's stupid, though, because...
It
yeah,
is stupid.
Because...
Like, I'm not defending it. I'm just saying that was kind of my take is like it wasn't really telling you which version was real. You know?
Yeah, see yeah. that. Yeah, I agree with Joe. That's way worse then, because the whole thing is like she in her head. The reason the violin person killed herself, you can only presume, is because she saw the same thing. She had a vision of herself doing something amazing, like in her last instant of life, and then
right.
she killed herself. And then now Juliet does the exact same thing, and so her very last thing she sees, like, this thing's possessing you. And I took it as like it gave her the vision that she was performing, so she didn't really know what she was doing, but it was making her kill herself. And then she should be dead. Like, that's how at least the movie works, because this thing
yeah.
has caused both these people to kill themselves. If you leave it open, that completely defeats the entire thing, because
yeah.
we know the first girl killed herself. So yeah, it was just dumb. I thought the whole thing was so boring.
I think if they wanted
so
to do
boring.
Something, they would show it to where, like, I don't know, the notebook falls and somebody else picks the notebook up.
Yeah, I mean, this,
like,
just like the last one, I mean, you only can presume it didn't end here, so why is there no revelation of it continuing? I guess
yeah.
you can just guess it will, but...
These were not good.
I think this one in particular, because you didn't have the culture, you didn't have at least the interesting things to look at that you did in Evil Eye. In Nocturne, it's like an hour and 10 minutes of watching a hand double play piano, and then like 20 minutes of some random drama. And
I like Nocturne better, but I just think that, but it's also, it's swinging for the fences a little bit more. And
yeah.
so when it misses,
yeah.
it's a lot more frustrating. And so, like, cause the ending is just really, for all of its creepy grandeur, is just kind of like, but what does any of it mean? And like,
I think I'm starting to like it less now that it's been compared to Black Swan.
You didn't pick up on that? Like,
I did initially, but like the more we're talking about it, I was like, it is exactly
yeah,
the
like,
same.
That's all I could think the whole, I actually looked it up on Wikipedia and reread the plot summary because I was like, I mean, it's been, the movie's 10 years old, and I'm just like,
sure.
I'm like, is this as much as I'm remembering? And I was like, well, son of a bitch, it is.
Yeah, that does even make it worse if it's just a cheap imitation. Like, that's too close. And I don't know. The thing is with these movies, there was nothing really creepy in either of them. And I think if you're going to sell a movie as being this horrifying thriller, psychological suspense thing, and you're going to try to put a couple images like she sees the dead spirit a couple times of the girl that killed herself.
Yeah.
But none of it was ever scary. None of it was that tension filled. And I think there just wasn't enough creepiness to it. Like, these movies, I think, for audiences that did go in to watch these, got completely bait and switched.
Yeah.
And they can't be happy with what they got.
I think they may have shot themselves in the foot, because if they wanted to do their version of Tales from the Crypt or The Twilight Zone or The Outer Limits, you can't lead with something that's an hour and a half, right? Like, The Lie is an hour and a half. It's a legit movie.
They all are. They're all
movies. Well, that's what I'm saying is, like, since they did that, they have to keep up with that format.
Yeah, now they're movies. They should have just been
our episodes.
You can if they wanted to, they could go. I mean, Twilight Zone did a season with hour long episodes. I mean, you can.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, like.
Well, I just meant like, yeah, I guess you could whittle these. You could definitely whittle all of these down to an hour.
You could absolutely whittle them down to an hour, except for maybe The Lie.
That's the only one I was thinking, and maybe that's your season finale.
Yeah,
I think they maybe tried, this is just speculation, but I think they tried to differentiate themselves, because all those, like, for the most part, Twilight Zone, Black Mirror, those are like hour long, you know, they're more television type things. And I think Blumhouse is like, well, we're going to do a bunch of twisty turny horror, quote unquote, movies, but they're going to be movies. And so it's a collection of movies. Like, this isn't a ripoff of The Twilight Zone. We're doing movies.
Oh, no. You know? Oh, I just think if they wanted to do that, if they wanted their own, right, like, there's been kind of like revamps of all of that stuff. Shudder has one. The Twilight Zone was CBS, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Unsolved Mysteries came back to Netflix. So, like, they've all kind of got this anthology these shows.
There's Creepshow. There's a Creepshow anthology.
Creepshow's on Shudder. Yeah. That's the one on Shudder. They can't do Twilight Zone because it's a muck up of rights. Like, that's why it's never been released on Blu-ray.
Wait, Twilight Zone's never been on Blu-ray?
No, Tales from the Crypt.
Oh, Tales from the Crypt. Yeah.
Did I say Twilight Zone?
Yeah. You said Twilight Zone. I was like, what? Like,
no,
so
Tales from the Crypt has never been released on Blu-ray.
And it's not on streaming.
It's on streaming.
It's so frustrating.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. You can get it on Vudu.
No, I mean, like, it's not on HBO, like, included.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
like, on
you
HBO,
can buy
but it's not,
it. You can buy it on streaming. Because I bought they had the first three seasons on sale for, like, $5 each, and I was like, sold.
Always do that. Gotcha. If you ever see those, even at $10, buy them, because they're great.
Yeah, but they're not, are they HD or they SD?
They're SD. They're still.
Yeah, that's that. Like, to Joe's point, like, I'm not buying them in SD, and, like, they're not streaming on HBO because of the rights issues where all the other HBO shows are streaming. So it's just a very confusing mix of rights.
Sure, yeah.
And I just felt like for Amazon saw an opening and Blumhouse saw an opening to kind of have the same, their cake and eat it too, and it was a mess.
I mean, in theory, it should work, right?
Yeah,
like, it's Blumhouse.
Should absolutely work.
Anthology stuff works. Twilight Zone, Black Mirror, Creepshow, Tales from the Crypt, they work. They were just very bad choices. Like, the execution is where it lies. The concept is not original, and the concept is a tested thing that works. They just unfortunately delivered 3 out of 4 bad products, and one.
Okay, so I think two bad. I mean, I'm not going to say that Black Box was bad. It's a good concept. It should have been an hour, but it's not a bad. It's not poorly done. It's nowhere near as poorly done as these two.
I mean, in that regard, they're all competent. I would say none of them are bad if you're measuring like that. I just mean three misses, and I think The Lie is good, but it's out of place
And I think a lot of people did not like The Lie. Like, I like The Lie, but I think a lot of people were like, thought it was slow and didn't go anywhere. And to me, it was not slow, and it did go somewhere, and I liked it. But I also get, you know, why someone might walk away from that, especially expecting a more traditional horror movie and being like, this is what we're doing. So it's really more of an art house movie with a twist.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely. Yep. That's the problem. It's the messaging is so mixed with this thing.
Yeah.
That if you're expecting horror, The Lie is your least favorite and it's the best film in our opinion.
I mean, Twilight Zone is great, right? But if they told you that you were going to see a Christmas movie, and then they put you down in front of, you know, Twilight Zone episode, you would not walk away going, that was great. You'd exactly. walk around going, what did you just show me? Right?
Right. Like, I hope they've got something with the other four, but if anything about this execution, the way they showed the first two that were the strongest and we thought they were a little lackluster for this thing, I don't know what the back four
isn't
are
it weird
be,
that like there's two versions of VHS, like VHS 1 and VHS 2, mm-hmm. that kind of tackle the same concept but are just so much better. And those shorts are...
Well,
because
they're shorts.
Because they're shorts, right? Like, you don't...
Yeah, but
you can
saying,
tell
like,
a little segment in a short. That's our main problem, is these are hour and a half that had
no
business being...
I am with you. Yeah. Like, it's just like, you can tell these little stories. And you can even take, like, clip it, you know, take a segment from VHS and turn it into an hour.
If it's
but
good enough, sure.
They couldn't do it. Like, then these don't work.
So, there you go. There's your next two entries in the... Blumtree House of Horror. So I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the virtual table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online, Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, and don't forget our Patreon, Patreon.com/Real Spoilers. $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content, and you help us out, and we appreciate it. So, anyway, that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in, and until next time, Nina gets a standing ovation.
Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, because we already warned you. Better watch out. It's going to ruin the plot.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.